Hi, this is John DeLancey, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to episode 229 of the Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me, as always, is the Comic Concierge. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's not going too shabby here. We're coming off the heels of a, to date the podcast specifically, off of a Halloween season and watching a lot of other horror content. And we've had some family sicknesses and things of that nature that derailed our release of this one a little bit, but we're back at it with our Cary Grant retrospective. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good, yeah. There was just the, it's a new season, so with that brings all the illness, so glad we're back talking to Mark Cary Grant. It's been a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. This will be our eighth and final installment of our Cary Grant retrospective. We will come back with one additional episode where we kind of wrap it up, similar to what we did with the Alfred Hitchcock retrospective, where we hand out some awards and give some final thoughts on our kind of journey through these eight Cary Grant films. So definitely looking forward to that. So we do have a little more content to give you along the topic of Cary Grant. Before we get into the facts on Cary Grant and specifically this film, Dan, what is your history with 1963's Charade?
I have zero history with it. I've never watched it. I didn't really know much about it. Well, I think I mentioned last time, I keep getting it recommended on a, like, because it's available on so many different platforms, and we've been watching a lot of Cary Grant movies. It's always like you may like showing up, but I've been holding off. I almost watched it until we decided to do this. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll wait until we get to it. So right. I've been anticipating it quite a bit, but I've been also trying to avoid knowing anything about it.
I also went into this one with completely no knowledge. Outside of it, does have slightly more, for me at least, name recognition with the title than a couple of the other ones we've taught. Like, I had never almost heard of Penny Serenade, An Affair to Remember, or None But the Lonely Heart. Whereas Charade, I feel like that one has just been more in the talked about over the years. So I at least knew the title a little bit more, but I knew nothing else besides that. So since we're both going in blind, there may be some others as well that don't know much about Charade. So we're going to let Dan fill us in on just the facts, and then we'll come back with our opinions of the film.
It's all come down to this. We finish our Cary Grant retrospective off with Charade, which is a 1963 spy thriller romantic comedy directed by Stanley Donen, starring Cary Grant, Audrey Hepburn, and Walter Matthau. In the film, widow Reggie Lampart, played by Hepburn, discovers her murdered husband was part of a World War II plot to steal a fortune in gold that is now missing. Pursued by his dangerous former accomplices and aided by charming but mysterious Peter Joshua, played by Grant, Reggie is caught in a sea of lies, shifting identities, and the occasional murder. As the truth unravels, she learns the fortune was hidden as rare stamps, and that Peter is really a U.S. agent named Brian Crankshack. Mixing romance, suspense, and humor, the film ends with love, and all the secrets finally revealed. Before becoming a film, Charade was written as a screenplay by Peter Stone, which couldn't get any traction. He adapted it into a novella for Red Book magazine, which caught Hollywood's eye, leading it to finally being made. The film is a mix of romance, comedy, and suspense, so Hitchcockian that is often mistaken for one of his. Director Stanley Donen, who's probably best known for Singing in the Rain, intentionally styled it like a Hitchcock thriller, even down to the opening title sequence. That bold and beautiful sequence was designed by Saul Bass, who also created sequences for Hitchcock in Vertigo and Psycho, and it's combined with Harry McConaughey's jazzy score, which fits it perfectly. Charade was filmed entirely around Paris, giving it an authentic feel, which was rather rare for Hollywood thrillers at the time. It's also the only time Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant appeared together. Their banter feels effortless because both actors were well known for their impeccable comedic timing and understanding of wit. Grant even improvised some of his best lines to lighten the tone. Upon release, it was extremely well received, including Alfred Hitchcock himself, who reportedly admired the direction and thought he wished he made it himself. But how does it hold up all these years later? Back to Kevin and myself to discuss.
All right. So having watched this 1963 film Charade. Dan, I do have one question that I thought up for you here. So this is his third to last film. He only does two films after this. And this is obviously the last one we're covering in this Cary Grant retrospective. We've made it all the way to 1963. So over the course of the films we've watched in this retrospective, and even the ones that we saw during the Hitchcock retrospective, we've seen Cary Grant do a number of different things, right? We've seen him do the slapstick comedy. We've seen him play the irresistible love interest. We've seen him ooze charisma. We've seen him channel James Bond before James Bond was a character. We've seen him navigate thrillers and suspense films. So does Charade give us a full circle moment where it comes back towards the end of his career and highlights all of those aspects of the iconic actor? Or being towards the end of his career, is this a revealing film to us that kind of shows that he's winding down his time in Hollywood and ready to ride off into the sunset? What do you think?
I would say more the former than the latter, for sure. Like, after watching this, I don't think I would assume that he would be nearing his end. If anything, like entering a new era for him in a bit. I mean, certainly shows he's still spry, although... As he's like jumping across the terrace of different apartment building or hotel rooms. I mean, probably wasn't him, but still, at least they made it look rather effective. And I still think he has a lot of the skills that we've been seeing. He's still, you know, charismatic as always. The comedy here maybe is a bit more broad at times. It doesn't feel as natural as some of the other, you know, we don't have the fast talking jabs, but I also think that's purposeful because this is a different film. But I think he settles into this role really well. It's not, you know, akin to like Liam Neeson going into Taken, being the serious actor and becoming this crazy action star. But it does feel like it is a different degree for him. Like he can tell he's a bit more seasoned. This is more of a serious role, but still has his ability to kind of show what made him a star in the first place. So I do think, as you mentioned, it does encapsulate a lot of what made him him. Maybe his fastball isn't, you know, in the high 90s, but I think it's certainly, you know, it's not in the low 80s either. So I think he's still rather effective in this.
I have one follow-up question before I give you my thoughts of the film here. Is it a crime that this is the only film that Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn appear in together?
It is sad because they are very good together. And honestly, like, I realized I've not seen a lot of, I'm obviously super aware of Audrey Hepburn and,
right,
you know, but I'm like, I'm realizing Breakfast at Tiffany's, Roman Holiday, I probably saw when I was a kid, but it's been forever since I watched any of those. And honestly, what I was thinking of watching this was when we talked about Vertigo and, you know, Jimmy Stewart and like how there wasn't any chemistry there and that kind of hindered our enjoyment of it. Mm-hmm. And then I went to this and obviously, you know, they have a pretty large age gap, right? You know, Cary Grant, yeah, was 25 doing, years difference. Yeah. Still, I mean, they're both great. Like they both are so super charming. And yeah, it's sad that this was the only movie they ever did together. Because I certainly think, you know, I think I would have loved to see what they could have done again, even if it was more like a comedic role or, you know, something that, you know, leaned into that a bit more. But argue maybe even Audrey Hepburn is the star here because she's carrying like the majority of the film.
Yeah, it was like one of the first things I did when the film got over is I was like, oh, I got to see what, you know, the other films that they did together. And then I was like Googling it. And I'm like, oh. This was it, I guess. Like, dang it. Like, I've seen Audrey Hepburn in, like, My Fair Lady. I don't know if I've seen her in anything else, and it's been a long time since I've seen My Fair Lady. But this was, like, Grace Kelly level, like, what we talked about with a few of her films. Like, she is just magnetizing on the screen. It's, like, not even a hesitation to understand why she was as famous as she was during this time in Hollywood. Like it's fairly evident very early on when she's on screen that it's like, oh yep, this is why it worked for her in Hollywood. So I had a lot, I like the thing that I kept thinking about while I was watching this film is just how much fun I was having with it. Like I was just thoroughly entertained throughout the whole thing, and I almost was stopped being like critical or even like trying to think of the film in like a critique manner. Like I was just having fun with it and forgetting about everything else. And I was just like, I don't care if there's anything like wrong with the filmmaking or wrong with the story or wrong with anything. Like, I'm just like, this is a fun little adventure. And I don't know if it's because it was the last one we were doing, but I just felt like this was almost the perfect wrap up film to watch for Cary Grant. And it was just like, wow, you know, he's 59 years old at this point. And yeah. It was just like, he was just as incredible here as he was, you know, 10, 20 years younger in some of the other films that we watched. I mean, granted, it's got, instead of like highlighting one of those aspects, like there are other films that we kind of talked about this when we went through the retrospective, like if you want a film where that's represents Cary Grant's James Bond like persona, then we had a certain film we could probably like point you to. Like if you want to see like his comedic chops, we probably have a different film that we would point you to. I don't know if this is the film that we would point to highlight any of those specific things in a singular manner, but I don't know if there's one better that points at all of them in a more minor manner. Like it's just, yeah. I feel like it just hits like on so many things throughout the entire film. And it does have and I want to get your opinion too. It does have quite the supporting cast in this film, like maybe more so than any film we've covered in any of either the Cary Grant or the Hitchcock retrospectives. Like I believe there's three people in this from a actor standpoint that had at least an Oscar nomination for either lead actor or supporting actor. Like I believe George Kennedy has one of those. Obviously Cary Grant did, and I'm going to say the wrong name. Is Walter Matthau was in this? No.
Yeah, Walter Matthau.
Yeah, Walter Matthau. And that's not to mention James Coburn. And I mean, there's obviously Audrey Hepburn, but like there's like a star-studded cast here. What did you kind of make of some of the surrounding characters?
Yeah, I had no idea that Walter Matthau was in this. Like when he showed up, I'm like, oh, wow, that's awesome. I mean, he's fantastic, of course. And you know, I think of him. I tend to go to comedic roles, of course, similar to Cary Grant. But in this, he's not really comedic at all. I wish. I mean, it couldn't happen because of the script. But I do wish we got more Cary Grant and Walter Matthau. Like, you know, it couldn't work with the movie the way it is. It would kind of destroy it. But just, you know, seeing them go back and forth, and like having them interact would have been something. Because you know, just seeing, you know, two, I'd say, comedic geniuses in their own right, like being able to play off, but they have very different ways about them. But yeah, the cast here is incredible. You know, you mentioned James Coburn, like that. Was not expecting to see George Kennedy. I'm like, oh wow, this is. I also didn't realize he was that tall. I had no idea that he was like that mountain of a man. Because I'm thinking of, no, but I should have realized it because of his role in things like Cool Hand Luke and stuff like that. But my mind went right to The Naked Gun. So yeah. That's where my head was at. But
I was looking at some of them trying to think of some of like the other roles that I wasn't aware that some of them did. And I found one interesting kind of connection that Jacques Marin, who plays the Inspector Grandpierre, I did see him once upon a time in one of the Herbie movies, the Herbie the Love Bug movies. Yeah. But I didn't realize that he was still doing stuff to the point where he was one of the voices in Monsters, Inc. He was Dr. Frazenberger in Monsters, oh, wow, Inc., which is weird because James Coburn was also a character in Monsters, Inc. So yeah. I didn't realize that two of these guys were still going. James Coburn also did like some Captain Planet voice work and some things like that. So, and obviously, like you said, they have a couple of them have like some big time Western presence in like some of the classic Western movies or even like Dallas, the TV show. So like this is definitely a very interesting surrounding cast. And it's obviously, you know, the main plot or the premise of this, like we talked about in the facts, you know, we have somewhat of a suspense thriller background where we get introduced to Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn's character. And then there's these three possible villains that we're trying to figure out who the bad guy is between all of them. And obviously sometimes they cast aspersions towards Cary Grant's character and things like that. So how do you think they played that dynamic where we have like these two that are like being played as the good characters, I guess, so to speak, or the innocent characters. And then we have like this, motley trio of potential villains that are trying to, you know, make some money off of this whole thing.
I really thought it did a good job of keeping me guessing of, like, where are these allegiances? Like, who's good and who's bad? Because I was like, are they using Cary Grant's, you know, persona against him? Like, using that to subvert expectations? Because it's like, it's Cary Grant. He can't be the bad guy. So I was like, oh, maybe he really is the bad guy. Maybe he isn't. So it did have me, like, questioning and, like, wondering who's on whose side. Eventually, though, it started to kind of, like, okay, clearly where it's going. But still, I thought it did a good job of keeping you, of utilizing all these different characters. And despite having this big cast, everyone felt like their role, everyone played a role. And you got a good sense of all their characters throughout this. So I thought that was really well handled.
Yeah, I was it definitely kept me guessing as well, which added to a little bit more of the suspense and thriller. It's always hard if you have a suspense or a thriller type film and it kind of shows you its hands too early, or it's just easy to, like, an easy tell. So I appreciate that this one did for a while keep me, like, trying to figure out how exactly this was. And I also, the, like, what they were looking for, like, there wasn't just the mystery of, like, who was potentially the bad guy that was like offing each person. It was also like, where is the thing they're looking for? Like, where's the MacGuffin? Yeah. Like, what are we actually after? And then obviously you have one of them that has, what would you call it? A hook for a hand instead, which kind of adds to his, like, villain persona, I guess you could say. And, like, they each have, like, they're very different characters, which helps. Like, there's no confusing them with each other. They definitely, like, are playing to specific, like, character traits that are unique to each one. So I kind of appreciated that for sure as well.
The easy comparison would be, and I think we mentioned this with The Catch a Thief, but it does, like, Dr. No came out the year before, and it does, even from, like, the opening song and the opening sequence, feels very James Bond inspired. Like, George Kennedy feels like a James Bond villain. They all kind of do in a way, like, different versions of it. I mean, you know, we've only got one film, but we got the books by now. I don't know if it was an influence or if it's just
true.
If it just seems that way because of the use of the locales, the skiing, it has all those different elements, but it does feel very influenced. Especially considering, you know, Dr. No the year before and how big of a hit that was worldwide.
I know you already mentioned it too. I wanted to get your take on how you felt like it worked or didn't work, because we mentioned the age difference, right? Like, Cary Grant's 59, Audrey Hepburn's 33 at this point. There's a 25-year difference. I will give Cary Grant some credit in, I don't know if it was the Wikipedia page, IMDb page, or where I saw it, but it did say something about the fact that he was somewhat sensitive or cautious about that fact going in because he didn't want it to look a certain way, and he definitely was not interested in playing up too much on the romantic aspects between the two if it was going to make him look, you know, a certain way. But it looked like they kind of went out of their way to make her more of the pursuer, and I think they even comment on the age during the film. So how do you think they worked as, like, the love interest given the actors themselves age gap difference?
I mentioned, I thought their chemistry was fantastic. Like, I also think, like, 33 and 56 is a lot different than, like, 33 and 18 or 19. Like, so it feels not nearly as icky or anything like that. Cause certainly, you know, she's old enough to make those types of decisions. And I do like, and she does feel like a character with her own agency. She's making her own decisions. And at times, though, like, I did get there to a point where I'm like, are we going to find out she secretly has been in on it this entire time?
And
she's really the mastermind behind it all. At a moment, I thought maybe that was going to be the twist. But no, ultimately, though, I did think they worked well as a couple. And I don't think maybe because it's Cary Grant, but the age thing didn't seem to enter them at all. So
I feel like he's also capable of playing himself younger than he actually is. Like, I don't know if you would watch this film and say, like, he's 60 years old or you know, will be within the next year. Like, I think he can almost play it off as if he's a little bit closer than they actually are in age. And I think she can somewhat do the same. Like, I watched this a film like this of her, and if you had asked me without doing any research, like how old she was, I wouldn't have been able to tell you. I don't
know. No, I honestly thought she would be younger than she was mm-hmm. when you said so. Like, but maybe like I thought maybe like mid 20s or so. But
right,
I guess that makes sense. So
it was interesting both- too, because even Cary Grant apparently really enjoyed filming this with her. One of his quotes I saw on IMDb said that after finishing the film, Cary Grant was quoted as saying, "All I want for Christmas is to make another movie with Audrey Hepburn." And it didn't happen because of some conflicts, because right after this, they both do a movie the next year, right? Like, she's cast already in My Fair Lady, for which comes out in 1964, and they offered Cary Grant the role of Professor Higgins in that, which he couldn't take because he was already cast in a film called Father Goose, which would be his second to last film. And then he requested her to be his co-star in Father Goose, but she couldn't do it because she was already cast in My Fair Lady. So like, it seemed like there was like something where they both kind of wanted to be in another film together, but it just couldn't quite work out because of what they were already contracted to do. So I guess it's crazy that they never got the other chance, like we kind of talked about before. But he does make a My Fair Lady reference in this film, which is kind of interesting because he uses the line "On the Street Where You Live," which is like one of the main songs from My Fair Lady. So I don't know if they had already known that she was cast in that by the time, but it was kind of, I guess, clever that they threw that in there.
Yeah, I completely missed that. So
I only got that because it was one of the other films that I performed in my high school days right after. And that's, I sang that specific song on stage. So when he said in the film, I was like, that's weird because that's the name of a song that she's literally in the movie for coming up. So that was kind of interesting. But what other thoughts? So anything that was a drawback for you for Charade that knocked it down a notch or anything?
I can't see anything really, like you said, I was just having fun with it as well. Nothing really, you can maybe argue, maybe it gets, there's a little bit too many twists for turn's sake, maybe, but I don't necessarily think so. I will say one thing, we often talk about how great Tom Hanks is, not Tom Hanks, I guess Tom Hanks is running, but I was thinking Tom Cruise, like how he runs. Cary Grant, like he... That dude can book it as well. He's doing a lot of running in this, and he's perfect form. Perfect form.
What did you think of the shower scene?
I thought that, I would say, like, that was the one, like, I get it. It felt like it was trying, like, okay, this is Cary Grant. We need to be funny. Here's a funny scene. I understood why it was there, but it didn't necessarily make me laugh.
Apparently there was something to it too, where he didn't really want to be without clothes in any way, shape, or form, given his age. And I guess he felt like self-conscious of what kind of shape he was in and things of that nature. So I think it started as like almost a joke inside of the joke just for the actors. And then they thought it was funny enough where they were like, let's just go with this and have you do this drip dry nonsense. But there was definitely a lot of twists and turns. I wasn't expecting, honestly, even as everything else was getting revealed, did not anticipate the exact ending that we got either. I don't know why. Yeah. Maybe my head was in the sand, but I was not anticipating exactly how it ended. So there was a lot of twists and turns, though, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and then because we get the final turn where he's actually is a good guy. I honestly thought like it's more interesting if he's not, but I get it. Like, I guess maybe that's something that they didn't want to happen, but.
Right.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it's kind of the summer blockbuster of its day. But you know, like you can certainly see how things like Mission Impossible was influenced by something like this, or a lot of those different spy films. And if you do like James Bond, I think this honestly is better than a lot of the Bond films. Maybe the action set pieces aren't as exotic, but some of the comedy did work. Like the scene with they're at the like the nightclub and they're using the melon to try and like move against that I thought was like, that's him at his best. That's vaudeville coming out as fast as possible. So
another side of Cary Grant that they found to work their way into this film. It felt like it's almost like they somehow knew this was going to be one of his last films and they're like, let's play all the hits.
I think it's like the the best film to end on, because, like, looking at the other movies that come out after this, don't seem nearly as acclaimed or as good. So, and on a high note, and I think this is probably the best high note, like the last great high note that he had in his career.
Yeah, I agree. The film did get some award attention. It got an Academy Award nomination for best song, for the song, which is the title song, Charade. I didn't know the British Academy Film Awards had like these categories, but she won for best British actress, and then he got nominated for best foreign actor. So I guess they have like specific categories just for British actors and actresses, at least back in this time period. And then like anybody that wasn't British gets a different classification. So I thought that was kind of funny. And they both got nominated. Go ahead.
Did not know she was British until just now. So
yeah. And they both got nominated for Golden Globes for this one, for actress in a motion picture, musical, or comedy. So I do think some of that was warranted. I'm surprised they didn't get more Academy Award attention with kind of how this all went.
I think probably if they like realized how near that he was the end of his career, maybe they would have. But they probably assumed that like he's got a lot more years going. But you know,
he definitely did not get enough award attention as he deserved over his body of work, I would say. Like, we had two times that he got nominated, and I feel like there was a lot of other chances for him to get put in the running for that. I also saw one other quote that I wanted to get your take on, it because I felt like it's a perfect way to... We went straight from a Hitchcock retrospective to a Cary Grant retrospective, and I saw this multiple places when I was doing research, that this has been called the best Hitchcock movie that Hitchcock never made. Do you think that that's fitting for this film? And in a way, I guess, is it also a perfect wrap up for us doing these two retrospectives back to back?
Honestly, I didn't get Hitchcock with this. I guess maybe because my head went to James Bond and I never came out, and it didn't feel like a Hitchcock thriller to me. It felt more like a kind of a spy film, and I don't necessarily associate that genre with him as much. I mean, certainly you have like the intrigue with the murder and those things, but it didn't, I didn't get Hitchcock vibes from it compared to like other films that I feel like.
I didn't necessarily either as much, but I do see where some people are coming from with like, it feels like there's not as much like a Hitchcock signature to it, but more of like a variety of things that harken back to Hitchcock films in a way. Like, obviously, you know, we have a thief involved for like To Catch a Thief, and there's a moment where they're kind of going into a tunnel or something, which is similar to the end of North by Northwest. And then there's the sequence with him on the roof, like there is on, you know, North by Northwest as well. So I feel like there's like some of those types of things that you could like tie to different sequences, scenes, or moments in Hitchcock films. But I didn't get the Hitchcock thumbprint on it, where it's like the things that we talked about during that retrospective. I think a lot of those are missing, obviously, from this overall.
You do make great points. Because that's a good comparison to something like North by Northwest, and or even To Catch a Thief. Like, I guess I could see some, like we mentioned with To Catch a Thief, I felt that even though it was before James Bond movies, it felt very James Bondish. So perhaps I guess when even though we've done so many Hitchcock films, my head goes to like the basics there. So
yeah, I totally get that. My only other interesting piece of trivia that I had for this one, I don't know if you saw this or not, but apparently when they release this movie, they have like the thing that says like the copyright like line that you have to put in for all of this type of thing. Like the Universal Picture Company Inc. and Stanley Donen Films, all rights reserved, blah blah blah, but they forgot to put the word copyright in it, which is required. You either have to have the word copyright, the abbreviation or copyright, or the copyright symbol. And since they didn't do that, as soon as it got released, it was in public domain.
That's amazing.
So I guess there's just like so many different like copies of this of different qualities and different things, because it was just like anybody could do anything with it immediately. So
that makes so much sense of why it's on, like I said, it's on so many different platforms.
Right.
It's on everything. It's on Hoopla. It's on like Tubi.
I think it's on YouTube. Everything. I think you can watch it on YouTube. Yeah. The only thing about this film that is under copyright is the original music from it. That's the only thing that got copyrighted for anything involved in the film. So I don't know if I've ever heard of a film going immediately to public domain, like as soon as it was actually released in the theaters.
Usually if it's something that's really bad, it's like, let's just let that one go.
Right. So that to me is hilarious for sure. Other things that you haven't got a chance to talk about as far as Charade goes?
No, I think that pretty much covers it for me.
It did do well, obviously, when it was released as, I think it had a budget of about $3 million. It says that box office was 13. I don't know if any of that is, I'm assuming just from that time, we're not talking about inflation or anything of that nature. It obviously has a pretty good score as far as like Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic and all that. I think it has like a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. It doesn't seem to, even though it was nominated for a lot of the different AFI lists, I didn't see anything about it actually making any of their lists, which I'm not saying that's 100% true, but usually they would have that either on IMDb or Wikipedia or something. They would mention that. And I see that it got nominated for like three or four of them, but to my knowledge, it didn't make any of them.
No, I think if any of all the movies we went through, I feel like this one is the most underappreciated. I feel like it needs to be talked about more because I don't think it's as good as North by Northwest, but I think it's in within a conversation of it, at least, or at least of all the Cary Grant movies we've watched, and we'll probably talk about this more next week, certainly near the top of what I've saw.
I feel like if I was putting together like an essential list of, if you want to know, like if you want to get a snapshot of Cary Grant's career, like these are the five or six films you have to watch, like this would 100% be in there. Yeah. Like, or it could almost be like the one where you're saying, like, if you want to see like little bits and pieces of everything that made him who he was, this may be one of the best examples to just watch and get a little bit of all of the taste of his different kind of things that he does, even though, like I said, it's not his funniest comedy. It's not his most suspenseful suspense. It's not his most, you know, it's close to his most James Bond-ish film, maybe.
Yeah.
But I feel like all the other stuff is like downplayed a little, but it's all there. So it's like, I think you kind of get an understanding for him as an actor by watching this one. If you only had to give like one film to watch to like get an idea of who he was, I feel like you either have to go with North by Northwest or this one.
Yeah. I mean, because you think of something like Bringing Up Baby, which is very much more just this comedic side, or things like that.
Same with His Girl Friday. Like those are like the more comedic versions.
Yeah, and this, we get a bit of drama here and there. Like when we learn his backstory, but like his even like the trailer for this has like, it's like a blender, and it's filling up all the different genres. And I honestly think that's a very good comparison and like a very good visual of like what this movie is and even like what all these performances entail as well.
Right. No, I totally agree. I mean, obviously if I was wanting to send someone to his dramatic side, I'd probably send him to Penny Serenade. Or, you know, something like that. But, I think this to me was like the perfect ending to our retrospective. So, I had a lot of fun with this one.
Awesome.
All right. So that means our next episode, we're going to be focusing in on the eight films that we covered during this retrospective. We're probably going to leave most of the Hitchcock stuff out since we already did a wrap up that had those, but we'll talk about the eight Cary Grant films, give out some awards for, supporting roles or whatever types of things we come up with, for that, maybe some best scenes or moments or different things like that. We'll keep you in suspense while we decide on what those categories are. And then we'll do some more fun things here in the holiday season that we'll probably reveal during that episode as well. Dan, if people want to leave you feedback or have questions or anything like that, how can they reach out to you?
You can find me on as Comic Concierge on pretty much all social media platforms.
And you can find me at Optimus Solo, at least on Twitter. And I think I have accounts on most of the other ones. I'm just really bad at checking them. So if you search out Optimus Solo, you'll find me somewhere. Or you can obviously search out the Cinema Geeks and comment on any of our stuff on those platforms, as well as going to geekcastradio.com, and there's episode posts there that you can always have a comment section that you can fill in something as well. So, all right, that does it for this episode. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to more of the Cinema Geeks.